This is America's Sports Talk Show, Sports Byline USA. Here's Ron Barr.
Paul Hornung joins us on Sports Byline USA. Of course, Paul in the Hall of Fame, not just one, but three of them, in addition to the NFL Hall of Fame, also a member of the high school and the college halls of fame, went to Notre Dame, was an NFL MVP, and has a book out appropriately called Golden Boy. Paul, I sense you writing this book is an effort on your part to kind of set the record straight or at least tell it in your own words. Am I correct about that?
Well, that's absolutely right. In fact, I was thinking about doing a book for 4 or 5 years, but then I said, well, I'll just kind of wait. I'm not worried. Maybe we will, maybe we won't. And then Dick Schaap, we were in New York having dinner. He said, you know, you and I ought to do a book. You ought to do a book. And I said, well, I've been thinking about it. And Dick came to Louisville, and he spent 4 days here, and then went back to New York and went in for a hip operation, never came out. So, I was left wondering whether I wanted to do the book or not without Dick, because he knew so much about me and the whole deal. So I dedicated the book to him. I said, well, I'll go ahead and try it myself. I found a gentleman here that knew me quite well, lived right around the corner from me. So it made it easy for us to collaborate, 4 hours a day for a couple of months. So I finally got a few things out that has never been written. I think it's an entertaining kind of a book. There's some laughs in it, and I enjoyed it when I finished it.
Yeah, I love the subtitle to the book, Girls, Games, and Gambling at Green Bay, and Notre Dame, too, by the way.
Well, we kind of met Notre Dame, and stories about Notre Dame, not necessarily gambling at Notre Dame. You know, one guy said, what, did you gamble at Notre Dame? I said, pardon me? What do you mean, did I gamble at Notre Dame? I said, like all college students, I played poker a few times, and we had blackjack games, and but, I mean, as far as gambling on football, there was none of that in college.
Paul, one of the things that I find interesting is that when I take a look at most athletes that write a book, unless there's somebody that is really high profile, there isn't a lot to talk about. I mean, their lives are mostly the sport they played. But you were kind of larger than life. You remind me of a Joe Namath before there was Joe Namath.
So, well, I guess that's a pretty good way to put it. Joe being a friend of mine, and I like Joe, I had a good time. There's no question about it. I like girls, and I like the nightlife, and I like traveling in the fun circles. And I was always single. I never played it down in professional football when I was married. I didn't get married till the day I retired. And so my whole football career was spiced with, stories that happen to youngsters when they're single. And, of course, I stayed single till I was 32 years old.
Well, that's the point that I'm making. For someone to write a book and then look back upon their life, was it hard for you to go back and reinvestigate and talk about some of these things?
I didn't think it was going to be hard, but you're right. It really is, because I come up with stories now, in the past 2 or 3 weeks. I said, damn, I forgot that. I could have thrown that in there. But I think there's enough stories in there to keep everybody interested in it, and it didn't hurt anybody. We weren't growing up in a time like today where guys carried guns and guys were doing dope and steroids and all that kind of thing. It wasn't as serious, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah, the two main things in this book probably that draw most people's attention is your discussion about gambling, which we'll get to a little bit later on, and then the comments that you made about admissions at Notre Dame, which I'll get to a little bit later on as well. A lot of people don't know. You ended up at Notre Dame because of your mom,
right?
Because you almost went to the University of Kentucky playing for Bear Bryant, but as you said, to her, a football scholarship to South Bend was a blessing. If I hadn't picked Notre Dame, I think it would have broken her heart.
It really would have, and she said a rosary a night for me just so I'd go to Notre Dame, and she was very, very Catholic, and I think those were times back in the 50s and 60s where youngsters, they went to college where your parents wanted you to go. Today, they make up more than not I think they make up their own minds where they want to go. But back in our day, you know, if your mom or your dad wanted you to go to a particular school, that's where you ended up.
One of the things I thought about when I found out that you almost ended up with Bear at Kentucky is, do you think your life would have been molded or changed in any way if you had played for somebody like Bear, who was so different, who was very Vince Lombardi-like?
Well, I don't know. I always had coaches like that. My high school coach was wild, screaming, disciplinarian, tough, you know, very successful. Bear brought my edge with Kentucky. See, you could play in the SEC back then as a freshman. So they made freshmen eligible in the 50s. So I would have been able to play at Kentucky in the SEC as a freshman where, you know, when we went to Notre Dame, you were ineligible until you were a sophomore. So I missed my freshman year, and I think that was the number one thing, you know, why I wanted to go to Kentucky with Bear Bryant.
Was Paul Hornung the antithesis to the image of Notre Dame at that particular time?
Well, you know, I was a good kid. There was, you know, I wasn't anything like the image you would understand in today's life, you know. But I was a pretty good kid. I didn't give anybody any problems in Notre Dame. I was a good student. I went to summer school and took my senior courses. Got under the tutelage of Ralph Guglielmi, and he said, "Paul, you know, by the time you're a senior, if you're All-American, which you probably will be, you want to have some free time." So I made it on the dean's list my senior year so I could go out and give some speeches and make a little money and my last semester at the university. And then, of course, you know, that last year when I was picked number one pick of the draft, that was kind of a surprise. But I knew I was going to be the number one pick because there were only two teams left in the bonus pick at that time. Chicago Cardinals, before they moved to St. Louis, and the Green Bay Packers. And I had heard from both teams, and they said I would be, you know, the number one pick of the draft. And it was a pretty good draft. I always said it was one of the best drafts in the history. It had Jim Brown and Jim Parker. I think Karras was in there. Tommy McDonald was in there. The 10 guys who were in the final for the Heisman Trophy that year, I think, is the strongest group in the history.
Yeah, and that year that you won the Heisman Trophy, very unusual because you were the first and you are the only college player to win the Heisman Trophy on a team that had a losing record, as Notre Dame went 2-8 that year.
That's true. It was 2-8. We were 8-2 my junior year. So we were picked number 5 in the country starting off my senior year. So we were really hopeful to have a very successful year. Notre Dame wasn't going to bowls in those days. So, you know, my season was just the season. And I had made a lot of the All-American teams as a junior. I'd been to New York, and I had been on some of the big television shows. So those were the first days where, when I got to New York, I befriended Toots Schoerer, who was one of the real characters of all time, and some great stories, you know, in the book about Toots. Toots, he called himself the handsome Jew, which he wasn't handsome at all. But he was just a big, big, beautiful guy. He spent himself rich, as he says. You know, he died broke, but he gave all his money away to his friends.
But I'm interested in something. On that December 4th, 1956 day, when you got the call from Charlie Callahan, and he handed you the telephone, and he said, "Here, tell your mother you've won the Heisman Trophy." What was your mother's response to that?
Well, she couldn't believe it. And, you know, we had to explain how important and really what it was. She was a great sports fan, but, you know, she hadn't heard of the word Heisman Trophy till our senior year. Because, you know, back then there wasn't a lot of hype on the Heisman Trophy until October or November. You know, so it's not like it is today where, my heavens, the teams start hawking their players in January, February before the season even gets there. So It was a little different situation.
As I indicated, 1956, you're the number one pick in the NFL draft, and you say the first 2 years Green Bay lost miserably. I hated Green Bay back then. When I got there, Green Bay was the Siberia of sports.
It sure was. Like you understand, it's a little bit different. Nothing is relative. Everybody says everything's relative. Well, you consider I was the number one pick of the draft. I got 15,000, 17,500, and 19,500 on a three-year contract, and I got $3,500 signing bonus. Everything isn't relative when you really look at it. But what the heavens, I had a great time. That was a considerable amount of money back, you know, in the middle 50s. If you were making $15,000 or $20,000, you were considered very lucky.
Hold on, Paul, just a second. Let me take a break here. Paul Horning has joined us. The name of his book is called Golden Boy, and we'll take a break and come back on the other side as we continue with more of you and Sports Byline.